You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera, and you're listening to 1030 The Voice. Good afternoon. It's Thursday. Weather continues to be very, very good. I'm glad to have this in, late May almost. Still kind of hay fevery, so if you don't understand me, it's probably me because I speak like this all the time. Tom, good to see you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey, you know, something that I did not talk about yesterday that I wanted to, got news, I don't know, maybe about 5 o'clock, 5:30, from somebody I know, and Dick Tomey was the leading vote getter Tuesday night at the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. The trustees there, they do a Sports Hall of Fame. It's a big deal, and it's very, very rare to have a Tucsonan or somebody from Tucson in that Hall of Fame. It's mostly Phoenix area people because, well, Phoenix area people vote on it. But now there's a couple of people, at least one, from Tucson who helps facilitate some maybe possible votes for people down here who are worthy. And Dick Tomey was the leading vote getter at the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. It hasn't been announced really officially, but they wanted to make it known that he was the leading vote getter. And it's very cool, very cool. I guess he'll be inducted here sometime soon. We have the public ceremony involving him a week from tomorrow out at McHale. So that should probably be well attended, into the thousands probably. I think it starts at 9. I think the doors open at 8. So we'll see. I'll probably be one of the many there with the who covered him media-wise. So that's good to talk about. Let me tell you, the NBA playoffs start here at 5:30. We'll probably keep that monitored tonight. Will Milwaukee win game 5? Is it, I guess, game 5? In a 3-game series now, because if they win, they go down to Toronto for game 6. And if they don't win that, they go back home to try to close it out in game 7 for the right to play Golden State.
You're still going with the Bucks?
Yes, going Golden State Bucks.
And the Golden State Bucks.
The Golden State Bucks series.
Oh, we've got a hyphen in there somewhere.
No, you just didn't let me finish my sentence.
Well, Golden State hyphen Bucks series.
Yeah.
No? Okay.
Tom, period. Please, period. Leave, period. Me alone.
Yes, sir, period.
So let me say, today's show, we're going to have Coach David Thomas, who's coming back to Arizona. He was in Denver for a little while, former Pusch Ridge High School coach, former Ironwood Ridge coach. He did a lot of stuff with the Arizona Power back in the day, a young guy. He's coming back to Phoenix to go to coach there. Wanted to have him on, get some philosophy, why he left, why he's coming back. He's kind of mostly a Southern Arizona guy. In fact, I think he grew up in Douglas. We'll talk about that. And again, we'll talk a little about Daddy Ball again. I don't want to kill that subject, but it's a subject that I kind of want to talk about a lot with coaches. And then at 5:40, we're going to have former Olympian, Lacey Neimeyer-John. She's been on the show before. I love talking to her before. We're going to talk philosophy for youth sports and kind of women and how they're kind of being empowered and things like that. Development that's beyond sports. It's more academic achievement and things like that. She was at something last night or the night before that was pretty interesting to me. I wanted her to talk about that. You know, she was part of the one of the 4 women all time to win NCAA Women of the Year in the last 28-29 years. I'll talk about that and what it all means to the little girls of the world or America. And then at 6:10-ish, we're going to talk to Tamara Statman. She's a utility player, mostly but comes off the bench and does a great job for the softball team. She had a big hit last week to help Arizona get to the Super Regional tomorrow. And we'll talk to her. I think she wants to have a future in radio. So I wanted to see if that's a possibility. Maybe if she's staying in town for the summer or whatever, maybe she can come in and be another co-host. I need as many co-hosts as I can there, Tom. You know, keep you on your toes.
No comment.
Keep you on your toes and keep me on my toes. You know, this one thing of, there's two things difficult about this job, and you probably know this because you're doing, how many shows you do? Mine?
Well, right now I'm doing John C. Scott and you.
And John, okay, so not too bad. We don't torture you that badly.
In the past I've done more, but I'm satisfied with what's happening now.
Take a guess. You probably know better than me. What are the most difficult parts of this show, besides me enunciating?
Finding something to talk about.
Yes, that's okay. And that's it.
Getting guests.
That's the number one thing.
That sort of correlates to finding something to talk about.
Because I could talk about a bunch of gibberish, and I do that often. But I think this show, the thing that many people like about it are my guests, and we talk about the good old days and just philosophy and things like that. I really don't get into the hits, runs, and errors of things, especially in the summer when it's going to be a bunch of dead air summertime in Tucson.
Is it going to be harder to find guests in the summer? Are they going to be leaving town or something?
No question. No, it's because, one, I think that the pool that I know of people, the pool of talent people I know, I've kind of run out. Not run out, but I'm getting to the... where I'm going to have to recycle, and I'm hoping that I don't have to recycle for new stories or old stories. I need to kind of refresh people's memories, because the people who listen to me from 1 to 3 are a different audience than listen to me now at 5 to 7, if that makes any sense.
You should expand your horizons in the summertime then. For example,
please,
once the NBA season is over,
yes,
get a hold of Steve Kerr and have him be a regular.
Oh, I love your enthusiasm, you crazy kook. No, it's not like that. Yeah, sure. Well, why don't you get a hold of Donald Trump? Just get a hold of his press secretary. Come here and...
I think Steve Kerr might be a little easier, I think.
But he's not. Why don't you get a hold of Sean Elliott just for a second? That kind of gets worked on, but they're very difficult to track down, even for 5-10 minutes.
I'm thinking, you know, during the off season.
Here's a box. Think out of that box, Tom.
I'm out of that box.
I know you're out of the box. See, I don't have a box. I can't afford a box, so I don't even have one. But all I like how you think.
I'll just keep coming up with the ideas, and you can keep slapping them down.
I know how realistic yours are. You know, I'll hit the lottery tomorrow, too. Why not? Well, I'm at it. You know what I didn't do?
You didn't get a lottery ticket for yesterday's drawing? Oh, Steve, you have missed out.
I know.
You could be a millionaire today.
I just realized that today, now as I said that. God, I'm going to have Javier tweet it again. And I don't know if you can retweet magic. Probably not. I don't think you can.
Maybe not. I don't know how that karma stuff works.
Joe, look at me. Look at karma. I'm at where I'm at for a reason. This is where karma's gotten me. Good luck with that, Steve. Good luck with that. So then we're going to talk to Stantman at 6:10, maybe talk to her for maybe 20 minutes, talk about the series coming up, just her role, how much she's enjoyed her career here, and things like that. So it should be a lot of fun going with the three people that we have on today. Yesterday's show was very good, I thought. We had Frank Burleson from Southern California, who does a lot of recruiting things for a number of different people. And then we had... Greg Hanson of the Arizona Daily Star talked a lot about a lot of different things locally. And then we had the boxing thing. In fact, I'm going to boxing tonight right after this show to cover the card tonight. I think it starts at 5. It probably started now, but the main events don't start till about 7. So I'm going to race down
those
there.
Those were some good interviews, and if anyone missed them,
yes,
they're going to be repeated Monday.
Right, they're going to be. You can rehear it today on KVOI. That's one of my repeats. But Monday, yeah, we're off Monday, so I picked that one as my replay show for Monday. Yeah, Memorial Day, we're going to be off. So I liked it so much, I'm going to have that as my replay. How do they do that? Do they just kind of just play them without saying, this is a replay of last week's show?
Oh, no. We let the audience know.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. See, tells you
we don't hide anything.
No, I wasn't assuming that. I'm just saying, how do they tell people that, you know, this happened a while back? I guess you'll know by the conversation. But I'll keep you monitored on the... NBA Finals, and we'll move on from there with our guests. In fact, I think it's 6:15, 6:16. We could talk a little bit more. What else is going on? What else is going on with you, Tom? Anything?
Well, no. Here's an example.
Oh, okay, cool. So that
we just let people know that.
So that people pop say, okay, I didn't know
today,
that.
Though,
it's not a repeat.
It's not a repeat.
This is live, so you're hearing nothing live right now.
Except that if you do decide to repeat this show, that will really confuse the listeners.
Oh, yeah, that will. No, I hope not.
It's almost like traveling backwards in time and shooting your grandfather or something. What happens?
Right, I get it. I get it. that was pretty funny. Let's take a break here because I know that Coach Thomas is going to call us here in a couple of minutes. We can take the break, and by that time, he'll be on the phone ready for us here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, and let's go to the phone lines right now and talk to Coach David Thomas. How are you?
I'm doing good, Steve. How about yourself?
Fine, thanks. Thanks for coming on the show. I know you're a busy, busy man trying to get out of the snow and try to get back to Arizona. Are you in snow or has it melted?
Actually, it melted, but it's supposed to snow tonight. So we're literally packing up the U-Haul right now and hoping to get out early in the morning, first thing.
Yes. Let me say, you're in Denver, correct? You were just with what team or what school?
Yes, I'm in Denver, Colorado, and I was just recently an assistant coach at Colorado Christian University under Jeff Hironaka, who was an assistant coach, longtime assistant coach at Washington State and Portland State.
Oh, very cool, very cool. So you were there for how many years?
I was there for two. I went and got my master's degree. So I finished it in 16 months, just got done on the 10th, and I now got an assistant coaching job at the New Park University in Gilbert, Arizona, so we're coming home.
You're coming home, or at least close to it.
Close to it.
Was the purpose of leaving Tucson for that, to go get your master's and then come back, or what was the plan?
You know, to be honest with you, I've always been trying to get into college coaching. I've networked my tail off and really tried to get to know guys, and My goal has always been to get into college, and Jeff Hironaka at the time when he was at Portland State recruited a player out of Tucson that played for me by the name of Brandon Rummel of Rincon High School, and I kind of struck up a relationship with Jeff during those times, and when he took over as the head coach at Colorado Christian, he gave me a call, and things just kind of worked itself out. We took a leap of faith, and here we are 2 years later, you know, and I got my master's degree and on to the next college coaching job.
Well, you did pick a nice city. I'm sure you picked a nice school to live for a couple of years because I know Denver is a fun place. It could be summer, winter, fall, and summer all in the same day.
Yeah, it's very, very schizophrenic. I mean, the weather here just, it comes and goes as it pleases. One day it'll be, you know, 70 degrees and beautiful and you can get a sunburn. The very next day it's snowing. And then the next day it's just nice and chill.
Yeah.
And everything's melting.
Cool, cool. So now you're coming back. What level is the team you're going to be covering or coaching?
So Park University is going to be a part of the NAIA. And so, this is actually their second campus. Their first campus is in Parkville, Missouri. And so they have done a similar model to what Benedictine University did, who's out of Illinois, that is now in Mesa, as well as Ottawa, which it started in Iowa, is now in Surprise, and now Park University, which was in Parkville, Missouri, is now opening up a second campus in Gilbert.
Right, right. So this is kind of just another stepping stone for you to get where you want to get to.
Yeah, you know, the ultimate goal is to be a head coach at the collegiate level. I was fortunate enough after I got my master's degree to skip a few spots and get up to the associate head coach, you know, the top assistant. And, you know, hopefully my next stop will lead to a head coaching job.
What? How old are you? You're like early 30s, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm 34 years old.
34 years old.
34 and you've been, years young. Let's call it that.
You've been coaching for at least probably half your life, but professionally maybe 12, something like that?
Yeah. So I would say 11 years. 11 years. I actually started off as a middle school basketball coach at Push Ridge Christian Academy for Lonnie Taverde a long, long time ago.
And then was under what, Peabody, and then who else?
Yeah, so after that, I went back to school. I played basketball at Southwestern College, which is now known as Arizona Christian University. I played there for 4 years, and then after I graduated there, I was coaching with Brian Peabody at Ironwood Ridge, and got to know a lot between him and Mike Morgan and Matt Minder. The basketball knowledge between those three is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and you're what? I think it's, as you know, I've had Peabody on about 1,000 times. you need about another 1,000 shows to catch up to him.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, I've got to be on. I think I've counted about 1,012. So this is number one. So I'm hoping when I get back into Arizona, you know, I can start padding my stats when I get there.
Yeah, if you come down to Tucson, you might have to co-host. And if you co-host, that equals to like 5 shows. So, you know, you catch up faster that way.
Hey, all you got to do is say win. I'll try and make it work. I promise you that.
Do you, Linda, I had you do some homework before when I was trying to schedule you. Did you see my video on Daddy Ball?
I did. Very interesting video. And just like I told you, just reading the title, I knew I was going to agree with it.
What did you think of it?
Well, you know, I definitely agree that, you know, the circuit, the AAU circuit is definitely a bad business model. There's a lot of reasons, though. I blame a little bit on the NCAA. I blame it on, you know, AAU not really having a handle. You know, any mom and dad can just say, hey, we're starting a team, get 7 guys and go start a team. And then all of a sudden they call themselves elite, and that's what it is. And unfortunately, you know, it's been watered down. And I really think that, you know, as he said in the video, he was talking about, you know, everybody gets the chance to play, which I think to some degree when they're little, I think there's something to be said for that. However, when you get older, my coaching philosophy has always been to teach life lessons, and, you know, teaching Johnny that he can do and say, and please, he can do what he wants and play when he wants is probably a bad thing to be teaching him.
At what point is little and when is not little anymore?
You know, that I couldn't answer. I would guess, you know, for my son, you know, being out in Denver, we tried to experience new things. One of the things that he wanted to do on his own was hockey. And so he was getting lessons, skating lessons and stuff like that. And there was dads, you know, my son's 5 years old, just turned 6. There was dads up against the glass yelling at their kids and telling them to do things. And I took the Brian Peabody approach where I sit at the very top. I watch everything. I don't say a word. And then when the lesson's done, I go down there, shake the coach's hand, and say thank you. You know, I think maybe that elementary school age, that might be the window where, yeah, every kid can kind of feel on whether or not they're going to be an athlete in the game of basketball or whatever sport they choose.
Right. How many, this is a question as a coach now, how many parents are like you? I was like you when I watched my son's play because, you know, what's the point of yelling? Because it's just loud noise. And everybody's, you know, they have a coach who's getting paid to do that. Let's let him do what he does. How many of those are like you and those who aren't like you, percentage-wise?
Percentage-wise, I would say, you know, 30 like, you know, that kind of let their parents, or excuse me, let their coaches, you know, do the actual coaching and trust them full well. I'd say there's probably about 70% to some level where they either want to meet with the coach, talk to the coach, have some say, even if it's just their quote unquote opinion, you know, that they've typically got to say or do something. And, you know, usually the magic phrase is, you know, I know he's my son and I'm not trying to be biased. That's kind of the magic phrase that some about to come out that's, you know, outside of your plan as a coach.
It's like when you're at a dinner and somebody, this is kind of what Lou used to tell me, or some of the more famous people, sorry to bother you, but, well, guess what's going to happen? They're going to bother you.
Exactly. And, you know, they're well-intentioned, and you know, I had very little patience with it when I was younger. But when I had kids, like I can understand to an extent. Fortunately for my son, he chose hockey, something I know zero about.
Right. Lucky you.
But to sit back and learn.
Yeah, lucky you. Lucky you. That's like me and my kids in soccer. I had no idea, no about spacing and being a team player. But hey, they're not asking me for strategy, so I'm not going to give any. What do I know?
Yeah,
what do I know?
Yeah.
So
if I remember, your son was quite the goalie at CDO.
Yeah, he was a couple, three times state. All-state
first
team. So he did, and he went to college. But that's another day. That's for another day. Let me ask you, though. So you hear it all the time, or you hear it most of the time, or at some point do they say, okay, I've said enough, and then you tell them, okay, you talk to me enough, and that's it?
You know, as I got kind of a little older through it and a little more experience, I typically would let parents talk until they felt that they were heard. Whether I changed my plans or not was a whole nother story. But oftentimes people just want to feel validated.
And
I allowed them to do that. Some parents definitely, stepped over the lines, but usually not before they just kind of went to another program, if that makes sense. They just said, okay, well, this is not what we're looking for. It's not for me. We're going to take Johnny elsewhere.
Right. Did you probably have less of that when you were with the Arizona Power back in the day when you created that organization?
When we had Arizona Power, I think for the most part, I'd say 99% of the parents were just really genuinely trusted me and really trustworthy with their kids. And we had a good thing going. Guys were getting, scholarships to the right level. To play at, I would say, with Arizona Power, my Power parents, they were absolutely amazing. So I think I got lucky on that one.
Right. So your level now, what division were you in? Denver? 2, 3?
So we were a Division II school. We opened up against 4 different Division I. So we had Air Force Wyoming, Northern Colorado, and Colorado State. So we got a pretty good experience playing at the Division I level as well.
So that's an ambitious schedule right away.
Yeah. Coach Hiro, he just wanted to play anybody, anywhere. It's very similar to myself. I kind of learned from Brian Peabody was, hey, you take your 5, I'll take my 5, and let's roll.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And that's the type of scheduling we're going to try and do at Park as well.
Right. Take your lumps. You'll know how good you are if you do take your lumps. But by the end of the year, you know where you stand and how good or capable of advancing you can be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have you, so now when you're moving to Phoenix, same level, Division II?
So in Phoenix, we'll be a part of the NAIA. The NAIA is technically a step down in the NCAA, but I definitely like the level. One thing that Coach Peabody had taught me is, I think he actually said it on the show, if he could go back and do it all over again, he'd coach at a lower level and coach for 10, 15 years. I like that about the NAIA level, that a guy can, really dig his feet in, be successful, and stay at a school for a long amount of time, whereas Division I school, you got guys, you think about the Michigan assistant coaches, they're heading into, the June and July recruiting periods, and then all of a sudden they don't have jobs.
Yeah, no question. You go and you find a place where you go to get fired. Many schools are like that. It's a job where you go maybe 3 years and you go to get fired. That's not good.
Yes, absolutely. So I like the NAIA level. I think ultimately that's kind of where I want to be. Maybe a Division III school, because academics have always been a huge deal for me, and that's what their main focus is, academics and athletics. So something like that where, I can also be a father, because that's definitely the most important thing to me.
Yeah, no question. So when do you eventually get to Phoenix? Pretty soon?
Actually, we are leaving tomorrow at 9:30 a.m. That would be 8:30 you guys' time.
Okay, cool. So and then you'll settle in and become Coach Thomas again.
Yeah, I've got about my first day is on Tuesday, where I officially go into the office and get everything done. So I need to get my weekend, my holiday weekend is going to be spent unpacking and you know, getting going and getting ready for work on Tuesday.
Yeah, well, part of my show, I'm sure you've listened because you've heard your boy Peabody on the show a few times. I like to talk philosophy, and obviously we kind of have, but I also like to talk about some history. So if you're 32, 34, you're 34, so you were 14 when, 14, 12, something like that, when Arizona won the national title. I wanted to see, you probably grew up loving them, watching them. You were a kid.
Absolutely.
You were a kid in Douglas watching and falling in love with all of it like everybody else was. Your favorite players and your best basketball players. Give me who they were.
Oh, shoot, man. I mean, we're going down Arizona Athletics. I mean, I always got to give a shout-out to my guy, Corey Williams, just because I got a personal relationship with him. But he could also stroke the ball. So, you know, when I was younger, I would play in my backyard. And you're right, I was about 14 years old. I always had Mike Bibby was my starting point guard. I had Miles Simon. I'd have A.J. Bramlett, then I'd have Michael Dickerson, and then I'd always dabble in my substitutions with Matt Offick, Khalid Reeves, and Damon Stoudemire.
Wow. That would be your starting five?
Yeah, I mean, I would always dabble with those guys. I was just a huge fan of that 97 team. I mean, you think about A.J. Bramlett, you know, getting those stitches from breaking a backboard in a couple days, and then he goes out and continues to play. I mean, that team was just big time for me.
Yeah, it's funny because we've had AJ on the show here, and obviously he's a guy from my area in New Mexico, and I asked him, I've asked him 1,000 times, and I'm sure people have too, when he broke the backboard, it was right before the Kansas game, and to me that kind of like was a turning point for him in terms of getting confidence, realizing who he was, because he had a fantastic tournament. And I asked him, was that the time? And he says, no. I've always had it in me. It's just one of those things that happened. So it's either you believe him or you don't. But he did play out of his mind after that.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, even though Dickerson didn't have a very good tournament, he defensively was locking down the other team's best player. You know, and then you had Bennett Davison helping AJ out, and Donnell Harris would come out in the game, and he had those big free throws in the overtime. The championship game that were just huge. I fell in love with that team, as you could probably tell.
Right. And Gene Edgerson was part of that group too, with like Harris.
Absolutely.
With Donnell. Yeah, and then of course Miles Simon having that great 3-week stretch of good play.
Yeah. You know, the him like Gene anymore. You can't throw those elbows like you used to back in the day.
No, that's true. I mean, he would not make. He'd be fouled out in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, you'd be kicked out. You'd be fined. You might get suspended. You don't do that. I think it was against Oregon. They were down in Oregon where he popped someone in the mouth, and I remember thinking, oh, wow, I can't wait to get older and just be able to do that, just be tough. But he was vicious with that basketball when he was rebounding.
Right. Well, in fact, yeah, you probably remember this. He was in Provo, Utah when he hit the guy in the back of the head and caused some problems. I don't remember the Oregon game, unless that's the one you were referring to.
It might be. I was 14. I'm trying my hardest.
Well, heck, you remember things better than I do, and I was at the games. But who else? How did you get Matt Othick in there, and how did you get – well, Khalid, of course, is very good. In fact, I had Greg Hansen on the show yesterday, and we talked about our all-time players in the last 30, 40 years. And Khalid, I don't know if he made the top five. He may have made the top five. But who's your number two player behind Sean Elliott?
Shoot, man. It had to be Miles just because of that stretch, man. I mean, you know, one of my most vivid memories growing up is when he hit that shot against UConn. And that's just always been, when I think Miles Simon, I think the tournament and that shot over UConn. I know there's probably guys that debatably are better than him, but he could impact the game. I mean, you know, as you already know, Brian Peabody was a head coach at South Point at the time, and he used to tell me, and I don't know if I should be saying this, so if Brian Peabody's listening, this is my fault, but he used to tell me that Miles and a bunch of the guys led by Miles would take him down to the gym after the practices or before the practices and run with his high school team. They do it on their days off. They do it on the weekends. And Brian would tell him, Miles, you gotta stop, dude. One of you guys are gonna get hurt. Luke's gonna kill me if you guys get hurt here. And Miles would literally tell him, well, either we're going to do it in your gym or we're going to do it somewhere else. So where would you rather us do it? And so just hearing stories like that about Miles, I mean, he was huge for me.
Yeah, no, I get it. He wasn't even in our top 10. He might, and definitely wasn't in our top 8. We had, and I totally believe what Greg said yesterday, it'd be Sean, Damon Stoudemire, and then after you get the number 2, it gets muddled after that, but you can include a lot of great guys, great players. You know, Khalid obviously was one of them, Gilbert Arenas another one, Mike Bibby of course, because they stayed longer. It's hard to put Sean's guys on that, because when you're a one and done guy, it's hard to include them on the overall list. They all deserve probably a different leave early list. Two different lists.
I mean, it's a different day and age in basketball. You got guys leaving after a year, and they were just talking about that with the Fab Five. The reason they were so impressive is because they were 5 freshmen playing against people's juniors and seniors. I was just an impressive team.
Right, right. And now, in fact, I don't know, you're probably still a huge fan, even from away. Everyone loves the incoming class for Arizona. I'm sure you're very impressed with him, and Sean is still doing what he's doing, getting some great classes. Everybody's holding out hope with this next young class. My only reservation, having done this for a long time, is relying on a bunch of freshmen to find magic to return the program to glory.
Yeah, you know, I think there's something to be said about that. I think, you know, just like any other thing, your philosophy, you're either going to win with it or lose with it as long as you stay true to it. So if they're rolling with 5 freshmen, then I'm all for it.
Right, right.
I think the freshmen he's got coming in are extremely talented. I've seen Nico play a few times, and I've seen Josh Green play when he was out in Phoenix with Hillcrest. So very, very talented players.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, Dave, welcome back to the show, or welcome to the show for the first time. When you get settled in Phoenix in the next 3 weeks, let's have you on again, and we'll talk philosophy and things like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Steve, I really appreciate you having me on. I've been a huge fan of yours ever since the Tucson Citizen. You and Corky Simpson, I used to love reading your stuff growing up. So I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you, Dave. You're making me feel old, but that's okay. That's okay. I appreciate
it. Thank you for having me on. You have a great one.
Great. Thanks. Hey, it's Peabody, Peabody 1000, Thomas 1.
Yeah. Hey, we're keeping score, man. I got to go good for that Thomas 1.
Coaches usually do keep score, unfortunately. Thanks, Coach.
Yes,
thanks, Coach.
Do.
Thanks, Dave.
All right, thanks.
All right, take
care.
Bye-bye. Hey, let's take a quick break here on 10:30, The Voice, and then come back. Hopefully we have Lisa Neimeyer on the phone here on Trusted Local News and Talk. Thanks. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera here on AM 1030 The Voice, and now I'll be talking to Lacey Neimeyer-John. Hello, Lacey. How are you?
Hi, Steve. I'm doing great. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for coming on the show. I saw you on Facebook at a pretty impressive event last night. I think it was last night. It could have been Tuesday night. But could you tell me what it was? And whoever you were honoring, at least the award named after, very impressive woman.
Oh, it was such a fun award. So it was actually on Monday night, and it was at Tucson High School, and it was the very first annual Coach Betty Sue Clark Award banquet, and I'm embarrassed, but I didn't know who Coach Clark was before I was contacted about the event, and Bridget Barber, who was an Arizona Wildcat, and now she coaches at Tucson High. She contacted me and told me a little bit about what they were wanting to do in honoring Coach Clark and the legacy that she had laid in Tucson, and especially with Tucson High and the women's tennis program. And she talked about the impact that Coach Clark had not only on the sport, you know, winning 11 state championships and being nationally recognized, but also the impact that she had on her players and women at that time, especially, you know, this is kind of pre-Title IX and during all of that transition with women's sports, you know, she was on the front end of that. And she was a huge advocate for women to be athletes. And she helped her athletes develop not only on the court, but also in life. And at the event, they actually had some of her former players there and they had a video of their interviews, and I mean, you just listen to them talk about Coach Clark, and that woman has made an impact on their lives, you know, ever since high school. So it was very, very impressive.
It was interesting to me, at least, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I could be wrong. She didn't even kind of know much about the sport, but she came in a coach and she won all these titles.
Yeah. So she was teaching at Tucson High, and they needed someone kind of on a temporary basis to go and coach. And she didn't really have coaching experience, but in her first year, they won state, and they won it by 1 point. And so, you know, it was like, okay, yeah, you can stay, I guess, you know. Just, it was amazing.
And then she kept winning them.
Mm-hmm.
She kept winning them. So it kind of goes to show you or and me and everybody else that coaching is not just more about talent. It's about finding that right spot for the players you have and kind of coaching them up and kind of giving them some nurturing and enthusiasm and all that to become a better player.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting because you heard some of her players talk in their video about, you know, the first time Coach Clark had approached them about playing tennis. And some of the players kind of looked at her like, I don't even know how to serve the ball. And, you know, Coach Clark, I guess, really took them under her wing and developed them and gave them that self-confidence, which carried on to other areas of their life. So it was great.
It's like you teaching me how to swim and I can't swim. Holy moly. Good luck with that.
We can always learn, Steve.
Oh, yes. No, this old dog is done. This little dog is done. Hey, so what did you learn from that? I mean, you must have learned a lot just by being there, learning about her, and then going to the event and kind of maybe just about the development of kids and how sports is just kind of one of those side things that you do along the way called life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, see, we've talked before, but, you know, my passion is player development, and you know, that's what I get to do every day working with CATS Life Skills at the University of Arizona. Because I do believe in the power of sport to help develop those characteristics and those core qualities that I think are innate within people, but can be refined and really polished and practiced through sport. And I'm always fascinated with coaches who get it, right? And, you know, Coach Clark was definitely a woman who got that piece where, you know, the better I can help you develop as a person, the better you're going to perform as an athlete and as a student and in life. And so when I was listening to her story and hearing the impact that she had on her athletes, you know, it's one of those kind of recharge moments where you're like, yes, like this is important. And you know, whenever you feel like you're not making an impact, you think of people like Coach Clark, where you know, it was those little day-to-day things that she said to her athletes and, you know, in the articles about her, you know, they had in the program before the event, it talked about, you know, how she would do the laundry and she was the one washing their uniforms and she was the one, you know, getting to know the families. And it was those little things that helped them feel not just like, you know, another number on the court, but really a human being and valued for that. And that endearing relationship that she had with her athletes.
What was the era of this? 1970s, 60s?
Yeah. So from the information that I have, you know, she started coaching in 1958.
Oh, wow.
And was then coaching for the next, you know, 13 years. So 1972, it looks like, was of her last seasons. Yeah.
So 13 years, and she won 11 state titles, I think it was. That's what I read.
Yeah, yep.
Wow. Well, you know what? And you've been among some of the best coaches in your sport, obviously being an Olympian. You had one here, and not to compare them, but you're kind of talking a lot about like what Frank Bush was in coaching and in playing or swimming for him, because I had him in here. In fact, you called when I had him in here. He he has that temperament that's perfect for athletes. Doesn't, I don't know if he got on you guys, probably not. I don't know. You probably didn't need to get on, but he had that way about him that you didn't want to disappoint him.
Yes. Yes. And, absolutely. Because you had that respect.
Right. Right.
And that was one thing that the player said. They never called her Betty Sue, right? They never addressed her by her first name, because they always addressed her as Coach or Miss Clark, or because they had that endearing respect for her. And, you know, I absolutely relate, because I have that respect for Coach Bush, and, you know, I still call him Coach today. And, you know, I think it is that person who can look at you beyond the X's and O's and the wins and losses.
Right.
Because sport is really one of the most vulnerable things I think we can do, right? Where else in life do you go all out and we expect you to fail in the weight room, and we, you know, give you these sets and practice that might seem impossible, and we ask you to do them and do them to the best of your ability, and you have to trust that person to do that. You know, am I able to trust you to, you know, sacrifice and to work so hard with no guarantee of really success? There's no guarantee you're going to win, but I'm going to trust the process and trust the program and trust the coach that's, you know, driving that ship or
driving the bus. Let me ask you something, and I have a reason why I'm asking you this. You've been with the U of A now administratively, and I use that word loosely because I'm not sure what you do, but what exactly do you do with the student athletes?
Yeah, I'm definitely not in administration. I'm definitely not that high up, but I love my job, and I work with the CATS program, which is a commitment to an athlete's total success, which was created by Sed Dempsey and Rocky LaRose and those founders of really holistic development for student athletes. And I work with Becky Bell, our director, and Sophia Reed, the other assistant director that's with me, and we focus on the personal development, the career development, and community engagement for student athletes. And so it's a lot of education. It's a lot of, you know, support groups, trying to help them identify other facets of their identity and who they are and where they can contribute beyond the pool or the field or the court.
Right, right. This is where I wanted to go with it, because you've been out of the game at least at the university level maybe 12 years, and I'm just guessing now. It could be longer than that.
Yeah.
and then you were a world-class athlete. Could you know, in your capacity as a student athlete and now, can you kind of determine if you saw somebody who's good academically, know that they are very good at what they do athletically?
I can't speak for all sports, because I definitely have more experience in the swimming realm. And I will say, for swimmers, usually it's, you know, the work ethic, the attention to detail, the ability just to kind of grind it out absolutely is, you know, seen in all facets of their life. And, you know, just look at our women's swim team and our men's swim team. You know, our women's swim team had the highest GPA of all our sports, you know, last semester. And it definitely correlates to the work that they put into their goals in the pool. They understand that same type of strategy and commitment and work ethic has to be applied to other goals that they have as well.
Right. And, no, that's why I ask. Yeah.
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 And I think you see it in other sports, this idea of excellence in everything.
no, exactly. Because so, if you have it at all, you're good in everything that you do. Because you're just not going to use it willy-nilly. You're going to use it at every spot that you're in, academically, athletically, person-wise. You're going to be a good person, or try to be. You know what I'm saying? If that's who you are, that's who you are.
Absolutely. I 100% agree.
So let me ask you, just because I have you for another 3 minutes or so, you've been at the top level. Who has impressed you throughout your career, maybe the best swimmer you've saw, and say, how in the world do they do that?
Yes, I've been blessed to see a lot of phenomenal athletes, and, you know, I think the benefit to being on, you know, national teams and to being on these collegiate teams is you get to see them outside of the pool. And, you know, the people that I admire in the sport weren't always those who were on the medal podium all the time, but were definitely good and were on these national teams. And, you know, I don't know if I could pinpoint one person.
Oh, you're being politically correct.
I absolutely have respect for a lot of my teammates, current and on the U of A team and on the national team. And
look at you! You're running for politics. You're running for politics, aren't you?
No, but I really can't name one. I really, and finally, I'm so out of it. People would be like, "Who is that person?" But.
Google them. They can Google them. No, because you've been around some great athletes in college and at the Olympic level. You said, you're like, wow, how do they do that? You know, heck, remember, you're the one that's going to teach me, the non-swimmer, how to swim. So I want to find that person, male or female, that says, wow, how do they become so fast?
Yeah. Well, and I loved watching them train. And, you know, when you're at the training camps, you know, it's like Michael Phelps, right?
Yep.
And I remember going into the 2008 Olympics, and we're at training camps, and we all know Michael's the best in the world at that time. And we were like, he's the GOAT right now. Like,
right.
He has every world record, and he has so much success. But yet, in the training camps, he was so meticulous in his training, and everything had a purpose. And I loved watching him train and how he talked with his coach, Bob Bowman, and you know, but he's the best. Like, he could have easily been like, you know what, I'm going to be all right. Like,
right.
Maybe I don't have to work as hard, or maybe I don't have to, you know, pay that attention to my finishes. Right. And then you show up at the Olympics and he wins a race by what, 3/100ths of a second, you know, the right. Hunter butterfly.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, yeah, that's why he paid attention, because even though you can have the most talent in the pool, you still have to put forth that work ethic.
Sure. And
it's kind of like the quote that we have in the weight room, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. Right.
Well, hey, Lacey, now I got to go, but thanks for joining me on
that's
the show.
Okay.
We'll talk soon. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Steve.
Bye. Well, that concludes the first hour. Thanks for Lacey calling in, and we'll talk to you on the other side. 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk.